Brews Club. We've got the need to podcast. This is episode 2, Taps, from 1981. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And I don't know how we did it, Mike, but we have selected an actor in which both of the first two movies he was in, he is the most manic part of it, and arguably the most watchable in both movies. I don't know how we did it.
Luck of the draw, I guess, you know? We just put all of our chips on the right color this time, but yeah, from an arsonist to, you know, this military academy cadet, he is super intense, and this was crazy. This was great. He was great in this. That's all I got to start by saying.
So the big news from IMDb, the IMDb Tribune, as Chris Podcast calls it,
says
that Tom Cruise was originally going to play a background character in the film, but the director Harold Becker was so impressed by the way he conducted himself during rehearsals that he was offered the part of David Sean. At first, Cruise refused, and then was finally convinced by Becker and producer Stanley R. Jaffe to play the role.
Did they say who he replaced? Did they have someone else in mind or anything?
I don't know. All I know is that 2,000 people auditioned for the Sean Penn part, and he won the role after he was seen in an off-Broadway play called Heartland by the film's casting director Shirley Rich.
Not Racing the Moon? Maybe that was after
that's
this.
That's three years later. That's 3 years later. This is also a year before Fast Times, shot at both Cage Club and Cinemakers. This is like the anti-Spicoli.
Yeah, I had always thought that was his first role, and I don't feel like I've ever seen him do a role like this again. Like, this seems very against what will become sort of his type, I feel. Like, he's not like the macho tough guy like I come to sort of know him as in movies and stuff, but
I feel like Racing with the Moon is maybe kind of close.
Yeah. I guess young Penn is very different,
vulnerable,
to watch.
Yeah,
I was not expecting that. But Cruise here, oh my gosh. Like, I can understand when they say like that guy's got something or whatever, but like, because he jumps out of this movie at me, and I can understand why the director really pushed him like to do this, and I'm really glad he did, because like, boom. I mean, I could tell just instantly. I loved when and we'll get into all the parading and stuff, but boy, like, he is precise with all that shit, and I was like, he is on point in this movie, and like, that was really cool.
I think that's the precision and the, like, I wrote down that this movie has more pomp and or circumstance than every other movie that I've ever seen. Like, there is so much regalia in the way that, like, the proper use of the word and, like, the improv, like, it just feels like this movie is so formal and fancy, and I feel like it's Tom Cruise's, like, precision and, like, dedication to this type of character, which is what won him over, you know, in the eyes of the director, because, like, you're right, like, he is on top of things.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the whole culture that they're going for on display here, right, with, like, the military academy. Like, I mean, this isn't, like, the best movie, but I really enjoyed it and thought it was entertaining, because it gets into that aspect of stuff where, like, this is a side of life I'm never, ever going to experience, right, like, only through film, and they kind of make a comment about that, I'll talk about a little bit later, maybe, about how military is portrayed in film and stuff. But, you know, this is like a high school film, but like a boarding school film, but also a military academy movie. Like, it was a very interesting mixture, and I found it entertaining on that level to see all of the rules and all of, like, you know, like the pecking order and, you know, who's in charge and who the superiority and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was a very interesting thing to watch on that level, regardless of, like, you know, whether it entirely, like, holds itself together throughout the entire thing.
You know, Mike, this was giving me flashbacks to another movie that you really loved, For Wounded Charlize. This was giving me flashbacks to Men of Honor.
Yeah, maybe I have, like, a secret love of,
I
like,
think you
military
love the military
movies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, maybe. I mean, I have no, you know, desire to join the military, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. I mean, you're a 40-year-old man.
At this point,
you've passed your point in life where you're going to join the military.
Probably. But, yeah, there's just something about the people that do embrace that lifestyle that is pretty fascinating, because it's a lifestyle you really have to be all in on, you know? Like, it is your life. It's, you know, it doesn't seem like you can just sort of turn this off.
No. Especially if you're Tom Cruise, right? But we will get to that.
Oh, boy.
So, this movie is about a military school in which there are a bunch of... So, it seems like there is one adult, and that is General Bash, who... Half an hour into this movie, George C. Scott, who plays Patton in Patton, there's a scuffle with a band of ruffians that I was calling the Outsiders. Like in a couple movies, no, the next movie, Cruz is going to be in the Outsiders, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt like this was like the ghost of Cruz's future, sort of roughing up the ghost of Cruz's present. A band of ruffians is like heckling this military school's prom of sorts, and in this scuffle, someone on one of the sides pulls the gun out of General Bash's waist that we had seen. Like, it was really like Chekhov's gun. Like, we saw like this close-up shot of this gun. Almost immediately, the gun goes off and kills a ruffian, kills an outsider. And General Bash goes to the hospital, has a heart attack on the way there, and then dies later in the movie. So this guy who's top billed in the movie is only in the first half an hour. But the movie is about this school where he's the only adult and everyone else is a high schooler who is, there's like a pecking order and there's, you know, majors and captains and cadets and all these different things. The school is going to be taken over by condo developers or local land developers. It's going to be bulldozed after the school year and replaced by housing, and they need to protect the school, and they have like a military standoff against the actual military, and some of them take it more seriously than others, most specifically Tom Cruise.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, I did not see this movie going in two directions, and the first direction is I thought it was going to be a straight up, we're just going to do a year at the academy, maybe someone's going to get hazed and it's going to go too far, right? Or like someone's going to die, but it'll have been an accident, and you know, we'll go on. First thing I didn't expect was that land developers came in and are going to tear down this historic military. Like, I just feel like the government would step in at some point too, because these graduates go on to West Point and like they listed all the honors of all the fallen soldiers who used to go there. I'm like, there's no way that this would just, you know, happen. But I'm going with it because Patton makes a speech at the commencement where he's like, I'm not going to let this happen. We're going to fight. And he like puts this idea into all the cadets' heads that like, don't go down without a fight. And then there's like, out of nowhere, there's that scuffle. I was not expecting that, but I should have known better. And the kid gets shot, and then Patton's out of the movie for good. George C. Scott. I know him mostly from Dr. Strangelove. I've still not seen Patton.
Right, yeah.
Should get to that this year. And then he's out of the movie. Second turn, I wasn't expecting to happen, that the young cadet ends up, it becomes his movie, The Siege, which, or The Standoff, which, there we go, like, okay, I really, once we got there, I started to sort of get my bearings again, and I was like, all right, this is the rest of the movie, and it plays out really well, actually. I was quite surprised, you know, there was a couple, I wouldn't say obvious, but, like, things I was expecting to happen, like some youngsters, you know, some little kids in the younger grades get shot and stuff, and there's some deaths that you wouldn't maybe expect that person to go, or whatever. There's dissension in the teenage ranks and stuff, and I thought it played out pretty well, actually.
I feel like this is the kind of thing where you could criticize it for trying to be like Oscar baity, but it also just feels so genuine and earnest that it's hard to do that, I think. Like, it seems like all the actors here have fully committed to this life and to this type of role. You were mentioning, you know, the George C. Scott speech at the beginning. There's that speech at the end between Timothy Hutton and Sean Penn where Timothy Hutton is just like, we gotta stop doing this. Like, where he finally realizes, like, the gravity of the situation. Like, there are a couple moments where just like, holy shit, like, this is serious. It's so well put together and so, like you're saying, unexpected, and it's just, it's not at all what I was expecting going into this, but here we are, I guess, right?
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised about how they were able to keep it entertaining. Like, there's some action sequences, there's some good argument sequences. Like, every time I thought it was just going to be kind of stale because we get scenes that aren't unique, per se. We've seen a lot of these scenes just in movies where kids are arguing with their parents, but now it's in a standoff at a military academy, so there's, like, a cool sort of extra tension twist going on between stuff. So it's nice how they've sort of, we're dealing with issues and things we've seen before, but it's the situation that I thought was really cool to sort of play into.
So to keep in line with our new format for the TomTom Club, our Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks podcast, if you're just listening to this one, we have a separate sort of running simultaneously podcast all about Tom Hanks. Go check out Hanks for the Memories, H-A-N-X for the Memories, alternating releases every Friday with this podcast. But Mike, what was your favorite moment? Before we get into the majesty of Tom Cruise, the mania of Tom Cruise in this movie, was it a thing that he did, or was it another moment? Like, what was your favorite part about Taps?
I had more than one, but I'm going to go with my first favorite moment, I think. It does involve Tom Cruise. We might get into it a little more in depth later, but So it's the moment where he surprises Timothy Hutton, where he asks him to like come out into the hall. He's got a surprise for him. And it's like this, I don't know. How do you explain it? He's got
it's
like
all processional. It's like this,
yeah,
like, he,
it's like
the chapter on the DVD is called Honored by His Peers or something like
mm-hmm.
that. Like,
yeah,
it's just a bunch of kids like paying respects to their new second in command, really.
Yeah, like he's got all of the like upperclassmen are in their uniform and full regalia lined up in the hallway, and Tom Cruise takes out a sword and marches up and down and sort of leads them, you know, in honoring their very good friend, and they start flipping the gun. They do the gun flip thing. And all I could keep thinking was, could you imagine if like they were on the battlefield and flipping guns to each other to like reload and recharge? And I don't know, I just found that part about it very curious as well, because I see that all the time, you know, talk about pomp and circumstance and
yeah.
parade and everything, like they do a lot of that gun flipping stuff. But I always wondered how practical that would be in battle. Otherwise, like, I thought that was my favorite scene. I think
I gotta go, my favorite moment I think might be, so actually, before we get to my favorite moment, before that scene, Timothy Hutton goes and has dinner and they drink brandy, and it's this big thing, and he's, you know, he gets the promotion, he gets these like the gold oak leaves, and he gets the collar, and like this is now he's the second in command. And George C. Scott tells him that, like, aside from him, aside from General Bash, like, he is now in charge. Like, Timothy Hutton is in charge of this school. George C. Scott shoots, like, is arrested for ostensibly shooting the kid and then has a heart attack. Like, Timothy Hutton's in charge of this school now, in charge of, like, 115 or 150 or whatever boys. Like, he's probably, what, 17?
Yeah, yeah, if that, yep.
Like, man, oh man. But, you know, he comes back from dinner and he lives with, his roommate is Sean Penn, and he's, like, showing off, and then Tom Cruise comes and just says, I would give my right nut for those gold oak leaves. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, he is just so in admiration of both Timothy Hutton and the honor and the rank and the regalia. Love that. I wrote that quote down. But my favorite thing, I think, was the very end of the movie. Jumping to the very end, we get, big moment here, Mike, our first Tom Cruise death in a movie.
Yeah, it's huge.
So at the end, Timothy Hutton and Sean Penn decide, this is enough, enough is enough. We're going to move on. We're outmatched. Like, this is stupid. We're just kids, essentially. I mean, that's not their reasoning, but that's essentially the point they come to. They all walk outside and basically wave the white flag of surrender, but Tom Cruise is sitting in his, like, it's almost like, you know,
it's a perch.
Yeah, Nation's Pride, or Pride
yeah,
of a Nation,
oh,
whatever that
was,
that movie was, the Eli
was
Roth
thinking,
movie.
Mm-hmm, in Inglourious Basterds?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, oh, he's no Zoller or whatever.
No.
name.
And he's sitting up there, and there's like this general or this other like high-ranking military guy in the actual military. He's not affiliated with the school, but he's the one that is like, or he's like the governor's muscle or whatever, and he's who they've been negotiating with. And he's standing right outside the gate watching everyone walk out, hats off, no guns in their hand. And Tom Cruise lines up his rifle and shoots this guy square in the chest, and then just starts shooting everybody else and pulls out a machine gun and starts going nuts. And like a tank drives through the gate and like they storm the base. You know, Tom Cruise is losing his mind and just shooting and shooting and shooting. Like he's like he's in war, like this is his nom. And then Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton run up. They're like, what are you doing? And he turns around just like spit spewing from his face. And he says, it's beautiful, man, beautiful. And then he gets lit the fuck up by bullets and dies into Sean Penn's arms, who then carries Tom Cruise outside, which is how the movie should end. But then we cut to a processional, like this other, like how the movie kind of begins, right? Like there's like this ceremony, like
mm-hmm. it's a
everything
roll call.
Goes
it's
on.
Like, it's something you see more or less in like a comedy where they do like a roll call of everyone, in, like all the lead roles in the movie. And you sort of see like that person was in the movie, that person was in the movie. But now it's like all the dead cadets. Most of them are gone, I think. Didn't Timothy Hutton get lit up as well in the crossfire, I thought? I thought he
maybe
died too.
I don't know,
then,
possibly.
Okay. And then Sean Penn was just left like wondering, like, what am I gonna do? Yeah, I called him Machine Gun Tommy because like all throughout the movie he was all about the guns.
Tommy
was
the Machine Gun from Rocky V?
Yeah. And then like when he was lifting weights, he had like, you know, he was pretty buff in this movie. Like even when his shirt was on, like he just looked very intimidating. And he had that buzz cut, but that moment was insane, for sure. Yeah, very good.
You know, we got a couple other babyface actors in this. We got a real young, I mean, everybody's real young, but a really young Giancarlo Esposito, the guy who plays Gus Fring on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, he's in this. We've got Evan Handler in his first movie role. I've never seen him with hair. I really only know him as Charlie Runkle in Californication. David Duchovny's like a perverted sex addict of an agent who's married to Pamela Adlon, and that he's got this like really shiny bald head in that. And here he's the one who, I don't know what his name is, but he's like one of the main kids, and this is his first movie.
Oh, okay, I think I know. The one who's like really with them, and then he jumps ship at one point.
Yes,
and all like,
yes.
I can't believe
he's
he
leading
left,
his platoon. He's the one who puts down the rifle, and they get really, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's the moment Tom Cruise starts to really flip, because he's realized like there's traitors in our midst, and like if one of my best mates could just, you know, leave like that, like I gotta make sure that when the shit is the fan, I'm in control like that. Because I feel like he loses it before the end, and at the end he's full on, you know, like at war.
Yeah, because there's even the moment where they're having like basically attendance is being taken, right? Like, how many of your men are still here? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm missing three, I'm missing four, I'm missing seven. And Tom Cruise is like, all soldiers accounted for. Like, he has whipped his red berets into shape.
Yeah.
And they even, like, point out, like, later in the movie that, like, you know, when Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton are talking, I think even, you know, Evan Handler brings it up. He's just like, you know, I was walking around, like, he's got his guys, like, ready to shoot and kill whoever walks by. I'm like, yeah, that's a soldier's duty. They're like, no, but, like, we're not that. And they're like, oh, yeah, right. Like, that's kind of, like, things maybe gone too far, but, like, we've seen, really, like, Tom Cruise, like, whip his boys into shape. It seems like, maybe it's not true, but it seems like a lot of his kids are younger. Like, mm-hmm. It seems like he's kind of got the younger recruits, and I know that some of them leave and some of them die at the end, but it feels like a lot of his guys are younger and more impressionable, and he has, like, the utmost control over all of them.
Sean Penn is even his rival in this, right? Like, him and Sean Penn really don't see eye to eye at all, because they're on like that food mission at the one point, and their car breaks down, and like someone gets out to try and fix it, but then more townies sort of show up, and then it starts to get like real hairy, and Tom Cruise just fucking jumps out of his truck with a machine gun and starts shooting it up into the air, going like and everyone gets into one truck and they pull away, and they get back to the academy, and Sean Penn is like pissed, and he's telling Timothy Hutton, he's like, he's losing control, he's lost it, man. And Tom Cruise is just like, hey man, I did what I had to do, man, like I got us back.
No one died,
like, like
it
we're
worked
all
essentially.
Yeah, and I was like, oh shit, like like they are drawing battle lines here, and it is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I love that scene where the car breaks down, and you know, he sort of saves the day by shooting his gun, but then like then there's like he's also like blaming, or he's calling Sean Penn out, because Sean Penn was driving, right, and like he rammed through the cop car, and like everybody's kind of a little bit at fault here, but not really. And like it's this weird, like I feel like watching the movie I wasn't sure if we were gonna get a real confrontation or not, because it felt like we definitely were, but it also seemed like, well, these kids aren't gonna take on the military, right? But like it seems like, oh no, but they might, you know what I mean? Like I was it was this weird delicate balance that the movie was playing between how far is this gonna go, and whew, it got there. I mean, it almost didn't, but then because of Tom Cruise, because of Tommy the Machine Gun, Machine Gun Tommy, he did it.
That's why I thought it was like ultimately like a good film, because they did go there. Like, it's just really interesting how the actual military like rolls in at that one point, and there's like hundreds of trucks, and they're like really putting on a show of force and calling the kids bluff, and the kids are like really trying to like not fold, you know, but a couple of them are like jumping over the fence, and one or two of them accidentally get shot. So it like really gets to a boiling point, and you feel it. And I was like really not expecting to be quite honest, to the point where at the end when they're all surrendering and the shot does go off, the shit really does hit the fan. Like, it really feels like it hits the fan, and you know, it does feel like a real war. And I was like, wow, they're going here, like they kind of earned it too.
So Mike, what was your least favorite moment of Taps? I mean, it's a movie that, like, I didn't love, but I think is well made. Like, it's not a movie that I'm going to watch again, but it's a movie that I'm sort of glad that I watched, especially for Tom Cruise's performance, to see where all these guys really started from. But is there something that you didn't like? What did you like least about Taps?
This might be a little hard to explain, but I'm going to go for it anyway. So it's more of like an idea that kind of confused me, that this movie feels like it at times is kind of sending mixed messages. There's a point in the early on when George C. Scott is having the kids over for dinner, and he's talking about, I've been here my entire life and people think I'm crazy. And it's like, you know, military leaders and media and film, like we're all portrayed as like crazy, like we gone mad. And then he's like, because in a way you have to go mad to do what we do and all this. And I'm like, where's this movie going with that? Are they gonna show us the kids are gonna keep their control and keep their cool and maintain under pressure. And then no, like the movie is kind of about how military academy raises these kids to go kind of crazy, you know? And it's like proven with the Tom Cruise character especially, but almost even by what Timothy Hutton does in the first place to start this whole sort of standoff in the first place and stuff. So like I was a little like I was able to put that out of my mind because ultimately I don't feel like this is a message movie. But I was confused as to why that was there, and the idea was always sort of worming around my head throughout. Like, what is this movie ultimately trying to say? I understand war is hell, like, it's bad and stuff, and, like, yeah, we shouldn't really be raising kids just to go to war, but, you know, we do have to get soldiers from somewhere. So I was just kind of confused a little bit on that front, if that qualifies for a worst part of the movie.
Sure. There's no wrong answers, Mike. It's whatever you want it to be.
Okay.
I'm going to go with one of my least favorite moments. I mean, this is not a movie that really bothered me. Like, I think at some points it was like a little bit slow, and like I was not turned off by how like, I was actually it was a weird blend of like bored but impressed but high by how formal they got. Like when the in the beginning when they have like the entire like church ceremony and then they have the entire thing, they're reading this incantation, they're reading this like description and stuff. I'm just like, they're really setting this movie up to be like a very specific formal thing. I wasn't loving watching it, but I was appreciating that this movie knew what it was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of the movie was kind of like that, where I was like, I don't like this isn't really, you know, I'm not feeling all of this, but I appreciate that the movie is dedicated to what it's doing. Like the scene where George C. Scott takes a pill or whatever, like there's like a 45-second like silent scene where he's just like, you see him like stressed and like kind of at the end of his rope, which I guess is kind of right before the heart attack. But I think I'm going to go with a scene in which there's not a lot of women in this movie because this is an all-boys military school. You know, there's a couple moms that come and talk to their kids or whatever. But at the prom, there's a couple girls and, you know, they're meeting with the General Bash and stuff. And then, you know, General Bash says to one girl, like, he, you know, meets her, shakes her hand or whatever. And then just like to the next kid, and this it's sort of innocuous, but also when you don't have too many women in your movie, he's just like, basically like, nice job, son, nice job. And it's just like, well, like, there's not a lot of women. I understand like it's the camaraderie, but also maybe don't treat one of the only like three women in your movie as like a total object. But you know, I don't know. It's just it sort of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. Like this is not a movie. There's not roles for women because there's not even roles for adults, right? Like it's just there's General Bash and then there's the other guy. Really, kind of not great representation.
Yeah, basically just the parents, right? There's one or two shots of like four parents, and I think maybe two of them are moms, and I think one of them says something and then is immediately talked down to by like one of the dads or something. So yeah, not great. Great, but I agree with like the opening too. Like when this started, my first note is somber. This movie is very somber, but it isn't ultimately, but it does take its time. Like it is gonna sort of draw everything out and try and make a point of everything and say like this is important. This is, you know, we're taking our time because it's important. And it was a little bit of an early hump to get over, but
Worth pointing out that Timothy Hutton was nominated for a Golden Globe for his performance, and as he did not win, he lost to Mickey Rooney, who starred in a TV movie named called Bill, which I've never heard of. But he
Nope.
won a Golden Globe for that, beating out Timothy Hutton for this movie. Taps cost $14 million to make. Any guesses how much it made at the box office, just domestic?
Let's see, 14. I think it did well. I'm gonna say 40, 45.
35.8. So almost
Okay.
30, almost 36. But yeah, that was it made its money back. It was a fairly decent hit. Looks like it opened its wide opening weekend. It opened in second behind a movie called Sharky's Machine, which I don't know what it is. Came out in January 82, opened limited in December 81, and then rolled out in 82.
Sounds like it could be like a Burt Reynolds title or something like that.
Actually, of note, in its fourth week, Raiders of the Lost Ark came in sixth. So this week, Taps was also in its fourth week here, but its first wide release week outgrossed Raiders of the Lost Ark. So that's an accomplishment there.
I got a tiny bit of a Red Dawn vibe from this just because it was like kids with machine guns, I guess, like doing military shit against adults, but yeah.
One of the first things I haven't seen Red Dawn, so I don't mean to blow by it, but I know about it. I know it's where Russia or North Korea or something invades us, right?
Yeah, the first one I've only seen, yeah, when Russia...
And they remade that, right?
Yeah, they remade it recently, and it was North Korea, I think.
Gotcha. Well, the first thing that we see, the way that we're introduced to Tom Cruise, he's coming down the stairs or up the stairs or whatever, and turns to someone and just says, hey, you want to play some Dungeons and Dragons? And I was like, what? What? And I was like, that's weird and cool, but also, it's the second movie in a row where he is all about sports and games. Like, in the first movie, Billy the Arsonist loves soccer, apparently, and here, Dungeons & Dragons, like a different kind of, you know, leisure activity, but also a sport and game, so there we go.
And he also turns to the camera and flips the bird.
He does.
Like, what an intro. Like, this kid's not taking any shit, I guess.
Oh, there's a scene where he's in the shower and he pushes his little kids aside to get, I guess, to have the warm water. And then Sean Penn comes in. Sean Penn, like, spends the first, like, half of this movie just busting his balls. And Sean Penn says, Snow White and the Two Dwarves. So we get almost some Tom Cruise nudity there. I don't know. Like, it's worth tracking, I think, nudity from movie to movie. We get another shirtless Cruise here a couple times, maybe, but...
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, and also, like, I mean, aside from maybe, like, prison movies, I can't remember seeing, like, it's just a conversation in a shower between a bunch of naked guys, but, like, it was a little awkward seeing, like, the two little, like, 10-year-olds between them, I guess. That was kind of strange.
And there's a shot where Sean Penn, like, stares at someone his age, but as a hit at that dude's dick and makes a joke about, like, mom never gave you toys to play with or something. And I was just like... What?
Locker room talk, but...
Locker room talk. There's a moment where the school... So after General Bash is arrested, the town or the governor or whoever sends people to the school to take stock of the ammunition and everything. You know, Timothy Hutton walks in on them and just finds out what's going on. And Tom Cruise says, maybe the best quote in the movie... I'd like to take a grenade and shove it right up their asses. And it's like, oh, this guy is, there's something in him. Like, there's something, he's unhinged.
He's got a short fuse, this kid. He's just doing what he's been taught and trained to do to the best of his ability, which is what scared me the most about all of this, right? Is like, he's a worst case scenario kind of thing. Like, you give him all the tools, but then he's snapped and he can go psycho.
And he's able to do, like, he's convincing.
Yes, that's the other thing. He's almost like, it's almost like cultish in a way, I feel, because he's got, like, the charisma, he's super smart and he knows what he's talking about, and he's, like, very manipulative towards these other people because they're all kids. Like, these are all, like, 15, like, 10 to 16-year-old people, you know? So, like, he's definitely one of the few, you know, one of the three or four that have their head screwed on straight and are not looking to be led, right? Because as a kid, I feel like we're all looking for leaders and we all succumb to lots of peer pressure. And if Tom Cruise is, like, in this movie putting the pressure on you, like, you're gonna fall in line behind a guy like that, like, one way or the other. So I just feel like he just acquired an immense amount of power somehow in this academy.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned the scene before, but when he's doing bicep curls, there's that, like, heavyset kid who comes by. We haven't seen him, I don't think, up to that point. And he just looks in at Tom Cruise. He's like, you got any grenades? Which I don't know what he's... I guess he's just gathering grenades. And Tom Cruise just turns his head, stares at him, still while doing his bicep curls, says not a word, turns his head, looks straight ahead again, and just keeps working out. And the kid just goes next door, and the kid next door is just like, oh yeah, here you go. And then, you know, Tom Cruise walks out, like, with his shirt on. But, like, again, like, it's just... He's got this, like, quiet intensity and, like, he's scary.
He is, man. It maintains that the whole movie too. I think he almost gets scarier than by the end. He's just, like you said before, he's like a monster or something, or like he's just something else. Like, he's reached this whole other level. Like, he's gotten out of control. But it's really interesting to watch. Like, that's what I'll just keep saying. Like, the way he's able to keep up that intensity throughout the entire movie, to be so, like, you know, for it to come through so well, like, consistently, like, it's amazing that, like, this is his first big movie like this.
Yeah.
Because he's really holding his own, and, like, you can just see, like, he's gonna surpass, like, you know, everyone else then around him at this point. Yeah, it's great.
And, like, later, you know, that intensity, that, like, assuredness comes back where, like, Timothy Hutton, I think it's, like, when he's starting to lose his grasp on like the situation and everything. And he says something to Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise is like, "Oh yeah, I slept like a baby this afternoon for 2 whole hours." Like, and he's just so jazzed. He's like, "This is what I live for. Like, this is what I've been waiting for." And Timothy Hutton just like looks like on the brink of exhaustion and like can't get anything done, and just he's just beat. And Cruise, he's got that movie star smile, and his eyes are shining. And he's like, "I'm like, bring it on. Like, I am ready for this." And it's, oh boy.
It's interesting because it does turn into like a real war movie.
You know,
like at one point it just does. Like it doesn't matter that where they are exactly, because they're all going through like mentally and physically like all of the same sort of cycles that people in the actual shit are going through that you see in other war movies and stuff, you know? Like it's really interesting on that level that this is just because we are sending kids this age to war. This is how they would probably be reacting over there. I'm not sure, though. That's one thing. When does this movie take place? Is it the 80s or the 60s or something? I really wasn't sure if it took place in the 80s, because then there wouldn't be a war going on necessarily, like a ground war. But
no, but I think that there's always, you always train troops just in case.
Yes. I was just thinking, like, if this took place something in, like, the 60s or something, then, like, these kids are facing Nam, and, you know, there's just a lot more weight to it, and maybe that's something they were trying to get to. Maybe they wanted to sort of draw parallels to that without calling it out too hard or anything. But, the PTSD hits them hard and early and settles in for the long haul. So it's crazy.
I'm looking at Wiki now to see if I can find a year. It was based on a 1979 novel, Father Sky. It follows a group of military school students. Cruise's second film role following a brief appearance in Endless Love, released in 1981, just a few months before Taps. I don't think it was a period piece. I think it was just supposed to be like modern day, which there's not a lot of, like, I mean, it was a different time when, you know, not like technology is like now, but there's not a lot of technology in the movie either way to like sort of tip its hand one way or the other. At one point, Tom Cruise holds up like a walkie-talkie to his head that's gigantic, but that just might be military grade, you know what I mean? So it's hard to say based on what's around them. I'm sure if people knew guns, they would know a little bit, maybe more. I don't know guns.
But yeah, I wasn't really, there's only a few scenes that take place off campus, so I couldn't really tell by the cars or any of the style or any of that kind of thing, but
I felt like, and maybe this is just misinterpretation, but I felt like the gang of outsiders that I was talking about were dressed kind of modern-ish. I feel like if they were 50s or 60s, they'd be sort of like more greasery.
Yeah, I get that. Okay.
But, you know, I don't know. That might not be right. Yeah. Have you seen Breaking Bad? Have you watched Breaking Bad?
I've seen all of Breaking Bad.
So, spoilers for anybody who has not seen Breaking Bad, skip ahead 30 seconds or so. Giancarlo Esposito getting lit on fire here reminded me a lot of his death as Gus Fring in Breaking Bad, where he gets exploded upon. Fiery demises in both situations.
You know me, man. Like, I always love to see people lit on fire in movies. Like, I don't know what it is.
It was good fire, too.
It was so unexpected also. But now that I look back, it was very much like Between Worlds, because he had like a big can of gasoline that he accidentally poured all over him. And then he just like lit a match or something, right?
No, he flipped the switch on the generator.
He flipped the switch.
And it sparked and hit him.
But
instantly engulfed him.
That's the thing, though. It was like a jump cut almost or something. I was very shocked.
Yeah, that was, whoo boy. I don't think I have any other notes. I have other trivia that I could go through, but oh, so before the movie began, the main actors, Timothy Hutton, Sean Penn, Tom Cruise, all of them, took place in a 45-day long period of orientation with the students of the Valley Forge Military Academy. They were given the uniforms and authentic military haircuts, slept in campus barracks, and were subjected to the same rigors and hardship that all the Valley Forge cadets went through. And this part is why it's notable, and I get the sense that, like, this isn't true because it feels like such a diva move so early, but it says that while most of the actors enjoyed and excelled at their orientation, Tom Cruise left training for the comforts of a nearby hotel until filming began. Like, it feels like if that other trivia is right, that he impressed the director with his, like, drive and his ambition, I don't think he's going to be the one who's like, yeah, see you later, guys, I'm going to go sleep in the hotel. Like, that just doesn't make sense, but maybe it's true, I don't know.
I don't know. You know what I kind of think? Like, sometimes I think, it's good to stay in method if that's your thing, but if that's not your thing, if you just want to kind of turn it off and go to bed in a comfort of a hotel, if that helps you become a better actor, I think it worked, if that's what he did, you know. Maybe that was for the best, and maybe it's a decision like that maybe, you know, the director came over and was like, hey, I noticed you're not staying with everybody, what's with that? And he's like, well, my method is to get a great night's sleep and make sure I'm fresh for the next day, and I could, like, stay in character like that. So Interesting.
There was interference a little bit with a writer's strike, or the Screen Actors Guild writer's strike of 1980, so the things sort of got shifted around there a little bit, but that's not of super importance or note. The director, Stanley R. Jaffe, loved this movie, so passionate about it, brought it to Columbia Pictures. They ran into a series of creative problems, but then he took it to 20th Century Fox, who immediately greenlit the project and let them go ahead with production. So this was sort of like a passion project for him.
Did he go to military school?
I don't know. Maybe?
All right. I mean, not of like great consequence, but it would be kind of, you know, interesting if like he needed to get that out of his system or something.
I think that's it. I mean, there's some trivia about like the gymnasium was destroyed and they had sort of difficulties finding a place to shoot this thing, but you know, nothing of real note. The big thing was Tom Cruise not supposed to be in this big of a role, but impressed people. And it's sort of a, you know, an early, I think it's Sean Penn's first feature film. You know, he'd acted before, but I think this is his first feature. And then, okay, you know, the next year he'll go on to be Spicoli. So go check out Cage Club and Cinemakers, our episodes of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, specifically the Cinemakers one. Like, we love Cage Club, but I think our episode, I don't think there's any doubting that our episode of Cinemakers was better than our Cage Club, just because there was more to talk about with Amy Heckerling than Cage's four scenes or whatever.
It's hard to do a Cage-centric episode of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Yeah.
This, weirdly, is our last guestless Tom Cruise episode until Collateral. Like, I don't know why nobody signed up for Collateral, for a long time, for 22 Cruise years, we will have guests. Before we get there, let us play some games. Let us play The Other Tom. If Tom Hanks, go shout out Hanks for the memories, was in this role of, let me get his name, I don't know if we've said his full name.
He's got two first names.
Yes, it is David Sean. But hold on, there's a full... He's got like a title too. Hang on. Cadet Captain David Sean, which, yes, two first names. I mean, the first movie, he only had one first name, no last name, just Billy the Arsonist. So now he's got three first names and no last names, really.
And he's got that nice official sort of title header going on too.
So if Tom Hanks were David Sean, I think based on what we saw in He Knows You're Alone, last week's Tom Hanks episode, I'm going to say that he would be a kind of guy. He might still snap, I don't know, but the way that I see it different is that he's kind of a bookworm, that he's the one reading, like, Sun Tzu, and he's reading all these, like, military strategy, and, like, he's just quietly in the background, and then toward the end of the movie, he comes up with a plan to, like, whether they follow through or not, but he comes up with a plan to take on the military, because he, you know, he's the learned one in this group. Like, the other people are the leaders, but he's also a leader, but he also knows the strategy. Like, it feels like, based on how much he was into Freud and the ego and all the psychology and whatever last week in He Knows You're Alone, I feel like he might, you know, read up on things and come up with a plan to, you know, take care of business.
Nice. Okay.
Thank you.
I like that turn. I like that take. I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction with my version of him. I mean, maybe because, you know, slight spoilers for what's coming, but I'm deep into Bosom Buddies right now because I just got to get ahead of that a little
bit.
Sure. I'm gonna say he kind of plays this role a little less serious. So he's more of like a prankster, jokester version of this character. But when things get serious, he flips on a switch and, like, he can, he's not as scary by any means, but he can be mean. We're going to see mean Hanks in this role, like, sort of slap around a cadet or two or things like that. But I also don't know if he makes it to the end. I think he might freak out earlier, you know, and try, like, maybe at the moment where the little boy get shot trying to be freed, like maybe he comes out with a machine gun and starts like opening fire because like he can't keep his cool as long as Tom Cruise can or something. So I'm gonna go with he's still a live wire, but he can't really maintain it for as long as Cruise can.
I like it. So now the other game, the harder question, maybe if you were going to Stan Lee yourself into this movie cameo wise, or what they are calling on HTML, husband's talking more or less, the Stanio.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know how we didn't trip upon that, but great.
What would you Stanio yourself into this movie? The tricky thing, Mike, is that we're both of an age that, like, we don't fit at the military academy. So it's kind of got to be someone else or somewhere else, right? Because like, we're not 18 or under or, like, 60 plus. With a little bit of restrictions there, what would you do? How would you Stanio yourself into this
movie? Okay, I got it. I know who I am. I'm the guy they trick to get their food supply. Like, you know, they go
Oh.
up to like the back of the place and they're like, "Yeah, we're coming today." And he's like, "Well, usually like we deliver it." And he's like, "Oh, right, but the school's closing down, so there's new protocol." I'd just be like, "Sure, whatever, kids. Just take what you want. Like, I'm out of here. Exit stage right."
I think I'm going to be the cop in the cop car that they get rammed through. And so they run through
Ah.
my car. I spin around. I roll my window down and just like shrug at the camera, like, can you believe it?
Nice. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. We have an email address here on the show, run, @cageclub.me.
Oh, I
Let us
love
know
that
what
so
you think.
much.
We're recording this one before we release our first episode. We're not usually going to do that. We're just only doing it this time because I have to go away for work for a week. And so away for a week for work. Away a week of work. We need to do it a little bit ahead of time, but if you write in, we will read it the next time we record an episode. Run@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think of this movie. The next movie we're doing is The Outsiders. So if you want to watch that ahead of time, give your thoughts on The Outsiders. We'll be happy to read whatever you write on air. Run, @cageclub.me. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/cageclub. You can support what we do here. You can also kick in a couple bucks and control what we watch next. More details at patreon.com/cageclub. Okay, Mike, big question. Does Tom Cruise run in this movie?
No, he didn't, did he?
I don't think he did.
I don't think so.
For a movie that's centers so much about physical activity, the fact that he doesn't run is sort of surprising.
He marches a hell of a lot.
He sure does.
No, that is a little strange because I was, wow.
You know, I haven't seen Rock of Ages, which we will get
Me
to at some
either.
point, but I feel like we might get a little bit of that choreography back. What's his
Oh,
name? Stacey
yeah.
Jacks, right?
Because he plays like a dancing rock star, right? He plays like
Yeah.
one of the leads. I don't know much about that except that it was a phenomenon. The Broadway show I heard was really good.
Stacey Jacks, he is low billed on IMDb. I guess it's in order of appearance, maybe, who knows? But so maybe a little bit of choreography will come back. But
Yeah.
I don't think there's any running. I think it's a run-free movie. So we are one of two. Does he
You know
run? Yes or no?
what is going to come back in full force is gunplay. Like
Oh, sure.
he's going to do a hell of a lot of that.
And also, I mean, he's not at war in Tropic Thunder, but there is, he's Tropic Thunder, and then there's all sorts of war movies between now and then. So, okay, Mike,
All
time for
right.
the awards segment, whatever we're going to call them. Still, I don't think we have a we don't we haven't
Nothing
drawn
yet.
inspiration, I don't think, from either of these movies for an award title name, but we will get there.
Maybe what would it be like from this movie? Would it be the saber?
The
Like the
Golden
sil
Sabers?
the golden
Oh no,
sabers or
it'd be
gold?
like the oak leaves, the golden oak leaves,
Oh, that's
maybe.
it. Yes. Okay,
I mean,
so for
he
now
doesn't
that's
have them, but he wants them, right? So
Yeah, they're cherished items, so we'll call them that from now on.
the
And people
golden
are gonna
oak
be like, "Where
leaves.
the hell did you get that reference?" And be like, "Bro, check out episode two."
Episode two. All right. So these at the end of every run of our podcast, we go through, we listen back, we look back at the movies that we talked about, the TV shows we talked about, highlight the best of the best, the worst of the worst, allow you, the listener, to vote on your favorite and least favorite in each of these categories. Mike, best film, worst film? I think it's somewhere in between. Like, we didn't
Yeah.
nominate last one for either one, but I don't
No.
think this is there. I think it's a fine movie, but not noteworthy either way.
No. Oh, you know what though? I just want to mention to you more than the listeners, I think, after listening back to our episode with Brian over on his podcast for Anna and the Apocalypse over on High School Slumber Party,
Yep.
I've sort of changed my star rating. So no longer is 2.5 just sort of like a middle of the road, like I enjoyed it movie. I've bumped that up to 3 stars now. I feel like that's just more general, like right down the middle. Everybody sort of knows what that means. So like, yeah, I gave this 3 stars,
Yeah,
right down the middle.
I agree. When I heard you say that 2.5 was like a movie you like, I was like, oh, okay. It's all arbitrary, but I think 3 is a nice little
Yeah.
cutoff. But
Yeah, I think it helps other people understand more, So like
yeah,
if that works, then good.
best of the worst, most fun, bad film. No, it's not a bad film.
No, again, yeah.
Best or
Okay.
worst role? I think it's kind of close to
Ooh.
best, but just knowing what's coming.
Yeah, I know, that's the problem. If we didn't know if somehow we lived in some if we lived in that universe with the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind place that Chris likes to talk about, where it's like if you could just
Yeah.
rewatch movies for the first time, maybe if we lived there, this would be the arsonist role.
But like it's gotta be like, can it compete with Ethan Hunt, really, right? And like
Exactly.
If it can't.
Or Maverick, even.
Exactly. Right, right. Most wasted performance. No. Best fight. Now, we've not really defined what the best fight is, but maybe him versus the military?
Or even him against the world by the end of this, right? Like, just the way, like, your favorite moment when he was shooting out at everybody, just, you know, him against the world.
Best outfit wardrobe. I mean, him in full, with the red beret in full gear is...
It's striking. I mean, it's striking in general, but, like, on him... Like, it works even more.
I mentioned before, best death, gunned down.
Absolutely.
In his perch.
I'm not aware how many times he's gonna bite the bullet in this one during Cruise Club, but he sure bit many bullets at the end of this movie.
Well, I know one movie where he bites the bullet over and over and over again, for one for sure. Best line, best freakout. He's got a couple different things here. Defining freakout, I mean, it's tough. I feel like for Cage, we had some sort of just single lines. I felt like the Charlize ones were more like these, like, extended sort of monologues, like, fuck the world, you know what I mean? There's a couple lines in here that I really like, it's beautiful, man, beautiful, or, like, the grenades and shove them up their asses. Like, if you had to nominate one of those lines, what do you think, which one should it be?
Probably the grenade one. I wrote that one down as well. But I mean, he full-on freaks out at the end of this movie in a way that, like... only he has, I feel like, on film so far. Like, I don't... Like, Cage, like you said, like, everyone sort of has their own special way of freaking out on camera, and I feel like him frothing at the mouth, like, wild-eyed, and like a uncaged animal or something like that might get more of stuff like that, of him screaming at the heavens in the future.
All right, I'll put it in there. So, best freak out. It's beautiful, man. Beautiful.
I wonder if Coppola saw this and was like, oh, I got to get him in my next movie. I should have had him in Apocalypse Now. Look at him in this.
Well, he would have been like 15, 16 in Apocalypse Now.
Oh, true.
But...
Yeah. I mean, Lawrence Fishburne was like 14 in that movie.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Best running scene does not. Best freak out I have here. Worst love story, best love story, no. Most badass role? I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even down the line, this might compete with a couple things to come.
I don't want to say no, but like it'll be tough, but maybe. Cadet Captain David Sean. Best non-cruise actor, male or female, or worst non-cruise actor, male or female. I feel like Timothy Hutton here is good, but I also feel like in even like 2 or 3 weeks, like I'm not going to remember him in this movie. Like he didn't like stand out to me in a way that other people, like I can still remember things that your boy Show Me the Money, Cuba Gooding Jr., which coming back for this podcast, the things he did in Men of Honor. You know what I mean? Like this, I feel like was good, but I feel like a lot of this sort of over time will just fade into the backdrop, the draperies of my mind. The things I'll remember from this movie are just Tom Cruise losing his goddamn mind.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was even disappointed that George C. Scott bowed out after like the first reel, but maybe he just was tired of playing military dudes at this point and stuff, and it was just like, I'll give you a couple minutes, but that's it. Yeah. And I want out of this movie. Yeah, so like maybe if he had stuck around for the whole thing, but I agree. I mean, I gotta be honest, like I had known the name Timothy Hutton, but I don't know like any of his other work aside from this. I couldn't tell you really. So like he didn't stick in my mind. Sean Penn, no, thank you. There's no women, unfortunately. Cruise just stole the show.
Yeah. So we nominated this for 6 awards. Best fight, right. Best outfit wardrobe, best death, best line, best freakout, most badass role. Anything else of note in this movie that we want to nominate it for? Or are we good? I mean, that's a lot of awards for this movie, but I think they're all justified. But anything else about this movie or his performance in it that we want to recognize? Or I think, are we good to move on to The Outsiders next week?
Yeah, I'm excited to move on, man. I mean, this was a lot of fun. This was a surprise. I'd never seen this movie. I kind of just knew it took place at a military academy, so like all the plot and stuff was a surprise and new and everything, and they're getting better and better, right? Like so hopefully the trend will continue. Yeah, Cruise's performance in this just blew me away, so that was definitely like just clapping and laughing and losing my mind while I was watching them, so it was a good time.
We'll come back in 2 weeks. We're talking about The Outsiders right here on Cruise Club, which we mentioned earlier, Brian Rodriguez on High School Slumber Party already covered The Outsiders. So if you want to listen to his episode about that, I think with Chris Carroll or maybe somebody else, go listen to Brian's episode of The Outsiders on the High School Slumber Party. In a way, kind of helped inspire us to do this because, you know, his guest on that episode said that's like one of his last roles, if not his last role, where he's not the star. And I was like, oh shit, maybe we should do him. So thank you, Brian. Shout out High School Slumber Party. But with us in 2 weeks on our Outsiders episode, we will have Joe 2, my co-host of a handful of podcasts, but most notably right now, Too Fast, Too Forever, in which we are in lap three, watching all the Fast and Furious movies on repeat forever. And lap three, we're joined by you, Mikester, for the ride-along lap. So go check out the Fast and the Furious lap three, episode one, two, whatever's out right now. And we're also joined by Aislinn Addington, co-host of the Contenders podcast right here on the network, where in a little bit, Mike and I might be on their show again, talking about another Tom movie coming up in a little bit. So some teasers, some spoilers, some previews there. But Joe 2 and Aislinn will join us in 2 weeks, our first guests here on Cruise Club for The Outsiders in 2 weeks on Cruise Club.
Awesome. Very
Any
cool.
last thoughts about Taps or Cruise Club before we pack it in?
I think we're two for two so far, my man. Like, this has been a very good idea. And I feel like we're going to be having a lot more fun as this goes along. So, like, yeah, I'm very happy right now. So bring it on.
Good, good things. For all things Cruise Club and Hanks for the Memories and our other 23 total shows on the network, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, run, at cageclub.me. Also, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/cageclub. Control what we want to watch next, what other series we're going to release special online. And, you know, we'll see you in a couple weeks for the next episode of Cruise Club. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
We'll see you in 2 weeks for The Outsiders right here on Cruise Club.